As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
All right, 304. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Yeah, so during the break, Fleegs is like, you know, for a self-proclaimed non-Met hater, you haven't spent a lot of time talking about him. I was like, well, I talked about the pitching staff. I said how I owe Stearns an apology. As we talk about the Mets right now, who are coming off a sweep of the Cardinals, and I talked about the atmosphere as well in the building, which has been, I mean, they're getting 39. Which one of the, I was listening to Evan's podcast. I know one of the, I think Saturday was a sellout.
Yeah, I was there. They announced it as a sellout.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a sellout in April against the Cardinals.
That's and a, so it's I was there early. Vibe. There was a bobblehead giveaway, too, so people are there early.
Yeah.
And we're season ticket holders, so we get in the early line. It's the biggest, longest line of people there before a game. Maybe, I mean, opening day, people are tailgating.
Sure.
So this was the longest with people waiting on a line. Old Timers Day was close, but, I mean, it was insane. Couple, 2.5 hours before Citi Field.
Right.
And you have probably what's going to be half the attendance of the game already waiting online trying to get in.
Yeah, crazy. No, I mean, the vibe has been completely different. I know we get into this, whether they're booing Soto or not earlier in the week. I don't... If it is, I know Howie thought he heard some boos. I think it's a very small group of, you know, I hate to call people idiots, but, you know, idiot Met fans who are booing Juan Soto for not being the, you know, immediately worth $765 million. Like, he's gotten off to a bit of a slow start. He's still on base a bunch, but he wasn't coming through in clutch spots. And I understand some frustration. I think booing the guy is ridiculous. I also think the idea, now this one was kind of organic. It wasn't set up the way Trey Turner was. It wasn't set up the way some of Lindor's were last year. But I think this idea now that we got to give these guys standing ovations, like, it's one thing if it's really, it's April. Like, Juan Soto doesn't, I know he said in the post game today that he heard it and he was asked about it and he appreciated it. And sure, of course he appreciated it. I get it. And look, I'm a big cheerer of guys, but the idea that Juan Soto needed some sort of, like, boost, Juan Soto is going to be fine. Juan Soto is a great player. And he's part of the reason this atmosphere is what it is. The excitement of this team is what it is. And right now they are playing, I said it before, for maybe, you know, Fleegs didn't hear it. If the pitching continues while this offense is getting hotter, and, you know, hopefully we'll see if, you know, Nimmo came through the big hit and a great catch. Hopefully he could start getting hot. You're getting what you can from Acuna right now, and even Beatty's been better, and that's going to be the next point here, what they do when McNeil comes back. But, I mean, you're talking about a team that has very little flaws right now. Like, you look at it, like, where's the hole with the New York Mets? Like, the lineup right now, right? I'll give you that. The back end of the lineup, center field, is an issue right now. Series injury, Taylor's not having the same kind of season he was last year. And we'll see, you know, Acuna McNeil in center. Like, they're going to start trying to get everybody in the lineup who's hitting, so you could see. So then you're talking about center field defense could be a little bit of an issue. Cunha's been great. Fleas just told me he's hitting 289. I didn't even realize it was that high. He's hitting 289. He's been great defensively. He gives you speed. He's come through with some clutch hits. He gets on base. He can run. He's given you, I was a Beatty guy at the start of the year, but I also have eyes now as I'm watching it. He just provides more. Beatty is turning around a little bit, having better at bats clearly. But Acuña has just been giving you more. He's been giving you better at bats for longer. He adds the element of probably better defensively, although I do think Beatty isn't terrible defensively at second base. Acuña's better at second base defensively. He gives you speed on the base paths. And he's been giving you better quality clutch at bats. And he's hitting 289. So right now, Acuña has earned his playing time. And when McNeil comes back, you're going to have to find a way to get them both in the lineup. But if that offense, which has started to awaken, you know, Pete Alonso's having a great year, having the best start of his career. Lindor is obviously the walk-off home run, the leadoff home run today. He's having, after a initial, you know, very brief couple games, slow start out in Houston, is obviously having a much better start to his season than he has the last couple of years. And if they really start to awaken here, and I know you're dealing with the Vientos injury, and he was starting to come out of it, home runs in back-to-back games. If this offense gets going, the pitching is incredibly good. It's the best pitching staff in all of baseball, and it hasn't really even been that close. I know the Dodgers, everything they're dealing with injuries too. You know, I saw that Glasnow exited the game with an injury yesterday. Snell is dealing with something. We still haven't. Otani hasn't started pitching. But you look at this staff right now for the Mets, even the bullpen. Stanek has been great. Kranich has been great. Like, again, we talked about it. Young has been their weakest link. A couple of poor performances in a row from Buto. But I still have, you know, confidence in him. Obviously, Diaz has been fine, a couple of shaky outings, but was just really good in his most recent one. Like, this is what they're doing right now and how they're doing it. And again, Clay Holmes has done a really incredible job as the starting pitcher. And what we're seeing is, like, what I love about it is his ability, and what scared me about Clay Holmes was his ability to stop the bleeding. And although it wasn't that bad today, what was it, a leadoff walk? Like, he's able to get himself into a little bit of trouble and find it. And then, you know, go six innings. It was the first couple starts were short, around five, four and a third, right? His first three starts were all four and a third, four and two thirds. He goes six to yesterday. He's been really good. I've been very impressed with Clay Holmes. Very. I don't know how you're not. I mean, he's just been remarkably good. And everybody in this rotation has been... have they had a bad start among them yet? I'll be totally honest. I didn't watch every game this week, of every pitch of every game. I watched all the condensed games on MLB, and I did catch some of every game. But, like, they don't have bad starts. The way they're pitching right now, it's remarkable. And if the hitting and if the lineup starts getting going, and if you get Vientos going, and now you're going to add McNeil back, and we'll see what he can bring. If they start doing what you expected them to do offensively, it's hard to find a hole on this team. Luis Torrens and his ability to come through with clutch hits. When Alvarez comes back, he's, you know, rehabbing down in the minors. When he comes back, there's going to be a real conversation about how many days a week Torrens plays. Like, defensively, they're solid. Great at certain positions, lesser at some, and especially if they're going to try and fit a bat into center field, you could see a little bit of a defensive issue there. But defensively, they're not, I wouldn't call it a weakness. Offensively has been their biggest weakness so far, but that seems to be rounding into shape. And pitching has been absurdly good. And I have to admit, like, I don't think I was overly rough with Stearns. I just asked some questions about how they go about building their staff. And I was a little critical, but I was like, I took a wait-and-see approach. I just said, this is harder than you think. And what you did last year does not guarantee you'll do it again this year. And so I understand the thought process, and I think not giving long-term contracts to 30-something pitchers makes a lot of sense to me. But it's hard to do this. And this team is ready to win a championship. That's what you've done. You know, your payroll's right there. It's right behind the Dodgers. You have the second highest payroll in baseball. Last year's run was incredible. You're supposed to get back to the NLCS and give the Dodgers a run. This is a championship or bust team, and you're throwing out Griffin Canning, and you're turning over, you know, I wouldn't call him a failed closer because Clay's my guy, but let's, for the argument of this conversation, you're turning failed closers into starters. You're bringing in the worst starter who, like, Griffin Canning was arguably the worst starter in baseball who made a start every fifth day. Like, any worse, you got benched. Any worse, you were taken out of a rotation. Like, this is who they're relying on. And it's been crazy good. So this would be it. I would never question the way they go about building a staff again. I'll never question again. Now, is Montas a good signing? As of right now, he hasn't pitched. It doesn't feel like one. But who's to say, like, do you have any other belief than you would be seeing the best of Frankie Montas if he were in the rotation right now? Like, how could you say anything else? Everyone, and I mean everyone, that they have plugged into this rotation over the last 2 years, you have seen the best version either of their entire career or of at least recent career. Right, Seve, was it the best year of Seve's career? No. But was it the best we've seen in 3 or 4? At least, yeah. Same thing with Manaea. Was he? Probably no. I mean, the second half of Manaea was probably the best he's ever been, but he's had good seasons with Oakland. It was just years since we saw that. But, I mean, every single pitcher they have put into this rotation has either been the best he's ever been or the best he's been in recent memory. They have not missed on a single guy. Quintana, Peterson, Manaea, Severino, Griffin Canning, Paul Blackburn even. Like, let's be honest. I mean, he wasn't any great shakes, but he certainly, even when he pitched well. What they are doing, and, you know, I scoffed at the pitching lab. I admit it. I think the Yankees have had as successful a pitching lab as anybody else in baseball. Cleveland's had a good one. The Dodgers have obviously had a good one. All of them pale in comparison to what the Mets have done over the last 2 years. The Dodgers, the Yankees, the Guardians, the Padres, the Astros of a couple of years ago when they turned Charlie Morton, they resurrected Verlander's career. They turned Gerrit Cole from a fine starter in Pittsburgh to a, you know, top of the league, best pitcher in baseball. So I could argue the Astros of the late teens, 17 to 20, 16 to 20, that pitching lab that the Astros had was pretty damn good. But those were even, you know, better names. Verlander resurrected his career, but, I mean, the guy won an MVP, let alone Cy Young's. So the Houston Astros have done a damn good job, but what right now what the Mets are doing, it blows the Dodgers out of the water, it blows the Yankees out of the water, it blows Cleveland out of the water. And it probably is even better with the names they're doing it with than even the Astros of the late 20-teens. But, I mean, it's as good as it gets. And if you're going to be able, and this is when we talk about building for the future, right? And I'll tell you as a Yankee fan, and I still feel this way as of right now, like, you can't tell me that the Mets' future is, like, guaranteed to be brighter than the Yankees, all right? As we went over with Judge, and we went over with Williams, Freudian slip. We went over with Williams. I believe in track record. And the Yankees have had a track record for 30 years. So I still believe the Yankees will be fine. They'll be fine after Judge. they'll be fine. They're the New York Yankees. They're going to be a winning, successful franchise that I still think Juan Soto would have been better off staying with. That's just how I feel. I'm a Yankee fan. I might be biased in that situation. But if the New York Mets, and you don't even have to have the highest payroll, and they're capable of it. You don't have to have the richest owner in baseball. But the fact that they do, if they are going to be able to piecemeal and pull off the scrap heap, which is where Clay Holmes and Griffin Canning were, if you're going to be able to do that and not invest any money into your rotation and overcome injuries and, hey, if someone gets hurt, fine, I'll pick up somebody else. Like, if you're going to be able to overcome injuries, not have to pay a rotation, not have to put any money into that, and put all of your money into young, talented position players, and that money being the highest of any team in baseball, this side of the Dodgers, that is a franchise that is in as bright a future as you could possibly be in Major League Baseball. Cheap pitching that performs excellent, and having more money than anybody else to invest in the Juan Sotos and the Justin Tuckers, and or not Justin Tuckers, Kyle Tuckers of the world. Well, yeah, now you're talking about a dominant franchise. And in my brain, I am still skeptical of the idea of being successful at this year in and year out. But if this entire season, now it's been 22, 23 games, but if this entire season goes the way, if this rotation, this bullpen, this pitching staff of the New York Mets is anywhere close to this good for the entire year, it's going to be hard to doubt them again. 2 years in a row doesn't sound like a fluke. And if you can build a franchise where you invest all of your money in position players and find cheap answers in your rotation and bullpen, and I know they have an expensive closer, but it's not a contract that this regime signed. If you're going to be able to do that, there is no limit to the amount of success and sustained success that your franchise can have. And that's why I understand doing it and why I've called it smart. Because on that surface, it is. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant idea. It's exactly how teams should be built. If you can do it, it's exactly how you'd want to build it. Cheap pitching because you can't trust their health and it doesn't go good for long. Like, that is absolutely true. And if you can find cheap, efficient pitching and put all of your money on the field in the position players, you are going to be wildly successful. And when you have the richest owner in baseball with the capabilities of that, you are going to be beyond that. I just don't know how that continues to be this successful. I just don't know how they do it. But so far, they are 1.5 for 1.5, or I shouldn't even say that, 1 and a tenth for 1 and a tenth. But if this continues, it's on another level. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Dave in Brooklyn, what's up, Dave?
Hey, what's up? I mean, hey, listen, it's going to continue. They got the money.
but not putting the money into the rotation.
Right, right. So imagine when they actually have to resort to spending the money, then they'll really be unstoppable.
I mean, yeah, but I don't know if they're I don't think they believe in it. Look at what they're doing. Why would you invest money into the rotation?
Right.
When
at
you're
this
getting,
point, I wouldn't.
Well, that's what
sure.
I'm saying.
Right.
But I'm
right.
saying, like, if this works this year, next year they'll do the same thing.
Right, but it just shows you that when you've got money, you can have the best people working on, you know, the pitching lab, the hitting lab, everything under the sun.
I guess.
You know?
But yeah.
I just want to quickly say this thing about Judge. I mean, if it weren't so sad, it would be hilarious. I mean, not only do they blow the call, mm-hmm. but then the guys in Chelsea blow the call.
Yeah.
And then to add insult to insult, they call him out on strikes and the same at bat with a ball that's not even close. I mean, it just doesn't get any crazier than this. And I looked it up, right?
I've
done a lot of research on this. Soto, it turns out, has been one of the luckiest batters in the last few years for getting the best calls by the umps. And Judge has been pretty much the worst.
Yeah.
Especially on balls below
the zone, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's so funny. And yet, Judge is still so much of a more dynamic player. I mean, you know as well as I do, if the count is 1-0, your likelihood of getting a hit is exponentially greater than if the count is 0-1.
Yeah.
And that's what these umpires are doing on a daily basis. Just for the record, Judge has at least 650 incorrect calls thus far in his career. Going into, I think, September of last year.
Okay.
So, you know, and yet he still continues to be maybe the greatest hitter as far as, I mean, like, he should be putting up Frank Thomas's 1990 numbers, like, every single year. His on-base percentage should be 480, should 470. His eye, he doesn't even get to show off the eye because he's got to jump on pitches so early in the count. It's amazing he walks as much as he does. But, oh, my God, this is so frustrating.
Yeah, no, listen, I think, I'll disagree with you on one thing. I do think it was a tough, corner. It was low corner, outside corner. You called the strikeout pitch not even close. I disagree with you. From what I saw in the box, unless the box is wrong. But the box that they showed, even on the broadcast, they talked about it. It was a pretty damn good pitch. It was probably a strike. I agree. After calling the home run foul, they could have given him a break on an absolute corner pitch, but it was a strike, and I don't think they have to give him a break. It's baseball. They went back and reviewed it. It's not just the umpires on the field. They went back, like you said, to MLB headquarters, reviewed it, and still called it foul, which is, again, the audacity of that call standing is remarkable.
The audacity of the call standing is remarkable.
Remarkable. But I obviously we all agree with the low strike zone on Judge. Now, Soto has earned the reputation, not even to make it a Soto-Judge thing. Soto's earned the reputation. He gets favorable calls. Judge is so tall. We have seen other tall hitters not have the same low strike zone. Stanton does not get as many low strikes called against him as Judge does. I don't know why. It's hard to explain, and they're roughly the same height. But... yeah, I mean, it's been, and let's be totally fair, all right? I'm not saying Soto used it as an excuse. He was just telling the truth that he's being pitched different. He was more attacked, or especially early on in the year last year, against, let's be honest, an American League that had never seen him. He was with Washington and San Diego, so he had never pitched in the American League, so a lot of the American League pitchers haven't faced him. They have faced Judge. And so early on in the year, they attacked him probably more than he was used to getting attacked, and certainly maybe now more than he's being attacked at the moment, even though, you know, listen, as great as... And this is one of the things that I find funny, or at least I'll disagree with. Like, people go, oh, what are you talking about? Right now, Alonso's as good as Judge. Like, yeah, okay, in the moment, it doesn't mean pitchers... Pitchers know that as hot as he is in the moment, Alonso's not Judge. And they're not going to be as afraid of him as Judge, even if he's hot in the minute. Like, you know, it's just not the same thing. It's just not. It doesn't mean that he's not good protection, that eventually if he stays hot this long, that they might not treat him similarly to Judge. I don't know. If he has an incredible year, if he has a Judgian year, then yeah, maybe. But right now, he's not Judge, even though he's hot. And I'm sure Soto is being pitched slightly different. And he was asked the question, he answered it honestly. It's not a big deal. But I will say, let's be fair, this is part of the reason why I'll say Judge is better. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who's hitting behind Judge. Doesn't matter who's hitting in front of Judge. It doesn't matter he gets bad calls against him. He is becoming, it's getting to the point where I would have to say, and I think I saw Evan talking about this with Tiki, it's getting to the point where he's approaching Barry Bonds as the best offensive player I've ever seen. He's becoming that. It's getting close. I don't know if he's there just yet, but he's getting to the point where he's the best offensive player I've ever seen. He's right there with Bonds. I think he's better than everybody else I've seen. I mean, I know that it's a couple of years that every player, like Frank, he mentioned Frank Thomas, yeah, for maybe a 2 year, where he won back-to-back MVPs, right? 93, 94, 94, 95, I don't know. 92, 93, I don't think so. I think it was 90, maybe. Early 90s. He had a couple of great years. His career wasn't always that great. Obviously, Ken Griffey Jr. was an incredible offensive player and a great defensive center fielder. I don't think he's where Judge is right now. I don't think he's as good as Judge is right now. And maybe that's recency bias, and it sure as hell might be Yankee bias. I'm not opposed to the idea, but it's I don't know. I think Barry Bonds is the only hitter I've ever seen be better. So eventually he's going to get pitched differently too, but I mean, it doesn't matter who hits behind him. He doesn't care about protection. Did we ever talk? We have talked about protection with Judge. Has Judge ever talked about protection? Has it ever mattered? The season didn't offensively get right until they moved Wells to clean up. Like, that's what kind of changed it. Before that, it was, you know, J.D. Davis. It was terrible who was hitting behind Judge. And yet he still had one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen from a right-handed hitter. So I just think he's by far the best offensive player in the sport. And I think whenever you hit in front of him, it's different than hitting in front of anybody else. And that's all Juan Soto said. Let's go to Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Yeah, good morning, C-Mac.
Good morning.
How was your vacation?
It was very nice and very relaxing.
Very peaceful.
Very peaceful. Yes, it was.
Now we have to come back to the
Now I'm back here working at 1 a.m. off of Easter Sunday. That's right. Right back at it.
That's it. So, yeah, you're right. One thing, they give Judge too many bad calls.
The caller brought it up, but it's absolutely true. He gets a lot of low strikes. I didn't think this was an egregious call against him after home run. I thought it was a good pitch.
The home run was bad. Terrible.
The audacity.
Yeah, but...
The audacity that call stands is remarkable.
How don't they get the right angle? I mean, they went to New York and they still didn't get it right.
Amazing.
I mean, it was. But the one thing about Judge, he just moves on. He gets 1-for-4. He's batting .390.
Yeah.
His OPS is out of this world. And you want to know what? He's approaching Barry Bonds is not the best player I ever saw. The best player I ever saw was number 24. But Judge, he's getting there. I mean, he's doing things the last 3 years that, except for 23 when he was hurt, and even still he had 37 home runs.
Yeah, no, he would have been on pace. His batting average was down, but he came back and was injured. But he was on pace to have another great year before he got hurt. And then, he hit a lot of home runs too. I didn't see Willie Mays play. He was not the best offensive player to ever play the game. I'm sorry, it's hard to argue. It's Babe Ruth and what he did against his peers for a time, and it's Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds in 02 and 03 and 04, those 3 years in particular, or 01, 02, 03, 04, like you don't get better. I mean, he would see, it's all cliche. We've all heard it and said it a million times. He would see one pitch a series, one pitch in at bat, one pitch a game, and he would hit it for a home run. Like, that's, but it's not wrong. He was, his on-base percentage was 600. He was the best offensive player I've ever seen. Judge is approaching it. And obviously Judge doesn't have the suspicion, let's just call it that, of steroid use. Now, I don't really want to get into that part of the conversation, but to me, we're rapidly approaching Judge being almost as good as Barry Bonds. We're getting there. That's how good he's been. 888 and the home run, yeah. And to me, it's not even so much, because look, it's a minor league ballpark, and me and Fleeks are talking about this. Major League Baseball need better pray that there are no playoff games played that Tampa Bay and or the A's do not play home playoff games, because these minor league ballparks, I mean, there's no angle. There's no camera angle for that. I mean, we saw the wind knock down how many home runs in the first couple games. We saw, this play where there's no camera angle and the foul poles aren't high enough. But to me, I don't even need the trajectory of the ball. They had an over-the-top camera angle of the field. and you saw quite clearly where in the tree it went into and what tree it went into. So you knew where the ball landed, and you had a picture above to see where that tree is in respect to the foul pole. It is so clearly in a tree that is in fair territory. I don't know how they didn't change. There's only one way to put it. There's only one way to put it. The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. It's the only way it can be said.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 338, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019 on this Monday morning, the week of the NFL draft. So much has been made, and we'll get more into it as we get closer. And, you know, there's only so much we could talk about. We know what we want our teams to do. I've yelled about the quarterback thing, but I'm going to yell about it one more time. Because I was on vacation. I was on vacation, much like Mr. Gump. Is there Mr. Gump? He's on vacation. And, again, Joe Shane spoke to the media. And look, I understand that they might not value a quarterback for the third pick, right? I still think that that is much more a possibility than people are saying right now. I would not be shocked if Shedeur Sanders is the third pick. I still think that's on the table. But, and again, I don't get hung up on too much on what they said because this is misleading and trying to, and I'm hoping that's what it is because the comment made the other day from Joe Shane just boggles my mind. Because even if you don't want one third, the Giants desperately need a quarterback. So when I heard this and I saw this clip on social media and I heard, you know, guys talking about it, I can't imagine the GM actually feeling this way. I can't imagine Joe Shane actually feeling this way. So this is the comment that I heard that just set me off while I was enjoying myself and my family on vacation.
I do think we've upgraded that room, you know, compared to where it was a year ago. I like the two guys that we have, and, you know, Tommy's still in there, and he's won games for us, too, and he's still developing, you know, so we're happy with the makeup of the room right now. With the signing of those two players, I think we put our position ourselves in a position where, you know, I don't think that's mandatory or something that we're, you know, our feet of the fire and we have to do.
So we're talking about Tommy DeVito, and then when asked that last one, that's the clip that really got me. Asked about whether or not they have to get a quarterback in this draft. Not with the third pick, just a quarterback in this draft. With the two signings, and just so we're all on the same page, those two signings are Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston. Those are the two signings he's referring to. I don't think we're in a position where we need to do that. The Giants absolutely need to add a quarterback of the future to this team. The idea that they don't is just so mind-numbing to me. The New York Giants absolutely, and it better be in the first two rounds so that it actually means something and not some flyer in the fourth. They need to find their quarterback of the future because that is a team's future. That is the NFL. If you do not have a quarterback of the future, and make no mistake, despite the idea that maybe they could win six or seven games with Russell Wilson or Jameis Winston, which I don't even know if that's possible, and the idea that Tommy DeVito is even still mentioned is laughable, the idea that they don't have to come out of this draft with a quarterback is so asinine and stupid that I refuse to believe he honestly feels that way. And that's why I'm choosing to think that it's all a misnomer and it's all a disguise and he's going to take a quarterback three because there is no way in hell you could look at this team with 2 years of Jameis Winston and a year of Russell Wilson and tell me they don't need a quarterback. They need a quarterback desperately. And I don't know what next year brings. And I don't know where they're going to be. Oh, I know it's a better quarterback. Oh, they'll just get Arch Manning. You don't know where you're going to be, what quarterbacks are going to be there. Like, they desperately need a quarterback of the future. Desperately. And if you want to say, like, I'll even understand, I'll disagree with, but I'll even understand if you feel there isn't one. I still think you need to come away with at least attempting to get one. But tell me you don't believe there is one. Don't tell me that the two signings put you in a position that you don't need one. That, my friends, is just flat out dumb. And that's why I don't think he's telling the truth. Because you can't honestly believe that. You cannot honestly believe that Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston have, and of course Tommy DeVito, have put you in a position where you don't need the quarterback. You do. You desperately do. Because we've seen what free agents look around the league. You see what free agency gets you. Free agent quarterbacks suck. They desperately need a quarterback of the future. And they don't know if they're going to have another opportunity. You want to say, hey, look, I don't deem any of them worthy of the third pick. And, hey, if there's a better player at the second round, like, garbage. The Giants need a quarterback of the future. Even if they're wrong, like, you have to take the shot. They have to get a quarterback. It is the most important position on a team. It is your entire team. They need a quarterback. They need one in the first two rounds. And until they don't do it, I'm not going to buy any of that garbage because I refuse to believe that Joe Shane honestly believes that the quarterback room of Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Tommy DeVito is good enough, or that that puts them in a position where they don't need a quarterback. I refuse to believe that. I think it's all a smokescreen, and I think it is still very, very likely that Shedeur Sanders is the pick at three, that they trade up to get Jackson Dart. I was listening to Ryan Dunleavy. He was on with Lori as I was driving in, and he thinks along the same lines as I do that the Giants are desperate to get a quarterback of the future somewhere in this draft, not necessarily third, but he believes they feel very strongly that Shedeur Sanders or Jackson Dart needs to be on the team moving forward. And that's why I still think if they deem the only and best opportunity to get that is with the third pick, I do not think it is out of the realm of possibility. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Ralph in Long Beach. What's up, Ralph?
C-Mac got a little cold here, but I'm telling you, I've been a Giant fan from the 70s. And C-Mac, what did we win with? Defensive line, offensive line. All the years.
You didn't win with Eli Manning?
You got to take up. He was okay, but
was
what
okay.
Did we win with? What did we sack in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you sacked Tom Brady.
You don't take problem. You're nuts. And I agree with you. Let's get Jason Dart. It reminds me of Bo Nix. I'm following 50 years. I'm telling you, C-Mac, you know your stuff, but you got this guy Carter is a beast. He reminds me of the kid on the Cowboys.
He reminds you of the kid on the Cowboys. How they doing?
Well, they got a guy that a maniac, owner. Forget about that. What did we win with, C-Mac? We won with the defensive line, not Eli. He managed. No. I love him.
You're minimizing how important Eli Manning was to those championships. No, now, I know how good the defensive line was. I understand. I'm not just hanging up on you because I don't want to talk to you. That your line was too much background noise. I'm sure we'll talk tomorrow. I love you too, buddy. But I'm so. They have a defensive line. They have Dexter Lawrence. Like, they've had decent defensive lines. They had, they need the quarterback. You don't win without, don't give me the defense, what they win with, the defensive line. They didn't win with Dave Brown in a good defensive line. They won with Eli Manning. They won with Phil Sims. Like, yeah, did the defensive line play an important role? Sure, of course. Of course. Getting after Tom Brady and affecting the other team's quarterback is a huge part of it. Don't disagree. But you can be wrong on the defensive lineman, too. No matter what we think, he is not a guarantee. And Dexter Lawrence is as good as it comes. It hasn't impacted the defense, hasn't impacted, you know, the winning at all. He's been here for how many years? He's been the best. He's been arguably the best D tackle for how long? It hasn't mattered. It hasn't mattered. They had the best running back in the league. Didn't matter. They have one of the better D tackles in the league. Doesn't matter. They have a Pro Bowl left tackle on the offensive line. Doesn't matter. You need the quarterback. You need the quarterback. It's today's NFL. You need the quarterback. Randy, currently driving to Florida. Is that a fact, Randy?
That is a fact. I left my house exactly 6 hours ago in Rockland County, 35 miles north of Roanoke, Virginia, I believe.
Ah, very good. You just driving by yourself, or?
Yeah, Florida or bust. My wife is an absolute gem, and every year she gives me a couple of weeks to go down to Florida. I got 8 fishing rods next to me in the car, and some other things that, let's say, we can enjoy legally in New York and New Jersey, and maybe not so much in Florida, but nevertheless.
Okay.
So, very nice. So Giants, boy, they ruined football for me, Mac, I'm telling you. How long have they been bad now? Like 10 years at least, right?
Pretty close to it, yeah, with a one playoff run mixed in it. But, yeah, no, they've been pretty bad since the Super Bowl of 2011.
So why is it okay with ownership, though? That's the part I don't understand.
I don't think it is okay. I don't think they're capable of fixing it. I think they've tried. I don't think it is okay. I think John Mara is absolutely miserable. There's a lot of sound on your line, too, Randy. Enjoy the trip. Drive safe, man. Good luck with that. I don't know when's the next time I'm going to do it, but hopefully not for a while. I was just in the car for 2 days, literally 2 days, about 47 hours between there and back. For a week, I was gone for a week. 2 of those days were driving. So safe travels on your solo fishing trip. Your wife is a gem. I think John Mara cares very. I don't think he's okay with it at all. I think he's made one bad decision after the next, after the next, after the next. He's been unable to hire a GM or coach. The last, you know, moving Reese into the GM position. Like, that's it. Right? Tom Coughlin was hired by his father. Ernie Accorsi was hired by his father. So promoting Reese after Ernie Accorsi left is really the only successful decision he's made. Every other coach, every other GM, every other decision John Mara has made has been the wrong one. Everyone. I think he cares desperately. I think he doesn't know how to fix it. And I'll tell you this right now. Again, if you want sustained winning and to turn your franchise around, you need the quarterback. We can differ on whether you like the quarterback or not. But how did we win thing, I mean, is just, I'm so tired of it. I really am. I'm so tired of how we won. We aren't them anymore. We don't have to be just like them. You don't have to be like that. You could be a completely different version of yourself. The Knicks team in the 90s, Knicks team was going to be my comparison. But this Knicks team hasn't won yet. But you can be like, they need a quarterback desperately. That's the NFL today. They haven't had one. Daniel Jones has crippled this team. Not having a quarterback has crippled this team. Look at the Jets. They haven't had a quarterback since 1969. That's why they have the longest playoff drought. That's why they haven't been back to the Super Bowl since then. Like, you need a quarterback if you want to have sustained winning as a franchise. You can have a pop-up season with Trent Dilfer. You can have a pop-up season with Rob Johnson if your team is perfect. But if you want to own the NFC North, you need Aaron Rodgers. You want to own the AFC East, you need Tom Brady. You need the guy who this coach helped develop. That's what you need. And the Giants don't have it. Eddie in Rockland, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, Mr. Florida, what's happening?
What's going on, Eddie? How are you?
You know, how was the Devil Ray game? I know you were trying to get the family to go to the Devil Ray game.
We ended up not doing the game.
I thought you reached out to the fans for some tickets. Nobody can come through for you?
No, I didn't reach out to anyone for tickets. That's a misconception. I was joking with Fliegelman one time about getting a suite. That was not a real thing, and nor did I reach out or ask anyone for anything. But we decided not to go
so you're telling me, wait a minute. You're telling me you work for the number one radio station in New York, and you're going down to Florida for vacation, and you have a chance to go see the Yankees in Tampa.
Yeah.
And there's no way for you to get any kind of tickets on the cuff from this organization. Is that what you're telling me?
I have no idea if that's the truth or not. I'm telling you I did not attempt to do so.
Gotcha. All right. It would have been nice to trickle down your way anyway. You've been talking about this vacation and the Yankee series for about like 3 weeks, but
yeah, I'm disappointed I didn't go. The amount of driving and the timing of it all, and my wife and kids kind of wanted to do Disney even just for a day, and so it ended up not happening. But
and you know, you're forgetting also, Chris, you know, after the 50 hours of driving, when you get down there, you got 10 hours of recovery time. You got to sleep for about 10 hours just to get back straight again.
Yeah, no, I was pretty good with that. Yeah, and exactly. Eddie, I don't know if you've heard me. I have two kids. I haven't slept 10 hours in less than a 3-day span in about, you know, 8 years. So, no, I drove over the middle of the night on the way down there. We stopped. My uncle has a place in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I got there mid, like 10 a.m., and I just stayed up until that night. And then we left early in the morning, and the same thing. Got there Sunday afternoon in Florida, and I just stayed up the whole night. I went to bedtime.
Yeah, well, as long as you got a midway spot to take a break, it's
yes,
okay.
You do need that. The first year I did it all the way through, and I don't think I would do it again.
Yeah, I did it all the way through. But let's get on your Giants, or our Giants, sure, or whatever they are. You know, you made the announcement of, you know, stupid and maybe smokescreen. That means liar. But let's get to the point of the situation. The Giants are not taking a quarterback, either first or second round. I think this the ownership is saying, let me see what you could do with the last 2 years of your contract, Dable, and then I'm not going to give you the keys to throw a quarterback on this if you're fired, you know, three quarters through the season next year. I don't see that. If you were the owner of the Giants, you know.
If I was the owner of the Giants and I made a commitment to them, I wouldn't fire them three quarters into the season, nor will John Mara. And if I made a commitment to them, I would allow them to build the future of this team. And it's funny that now, you know, everyone, I mean, we talk about how, oh, they need to save their job, so they need to draft as much talent for this team as possible. When at the start of this, we were all like, "Oh, they need to save their job, so they're going to draft a quarterback." Like, I love how we've gone completely the opposite way on what is going to save their jobs. And to me, winning is going to save their jobs. But also, if you're not going to win, you better have a plan for the future. And that's what I don't understand. Like, you mentioned what the owner should want. What sold the owner on keeping them? Like, that's my question. What plan did they provide? Was it just strictly, I don't want to fire you guys, so I'm not going to? Did they not have a meeting? Like, what was the vision? Here's the vision, John. This is why we should stay. We're going to sign two old, outdated quarterbacks who aren't really any good anymore, and we're going to hope to win 5 or 6 games in a division with the Super Bowl champs and the NFC and their NFC championship game opponent with the toughest home schedule in the NFL and one of the toughest schedules, period, in the NFL. And we're going to sign Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and hope to win 5 or 6 games. That's the plan? That sounds terrific. We got to bring you guys back. There's got to be a plan for the future. There is no future right now. He could talk all he wants about the quarterback room. There's no future. Why would you bring these two guys back and say, hey, you better win me 7-8 games? And then what?
try to win you 7-8 games again next year with Russell Wilson? Because you're not doing better than that, no matter how much you improve the team around him. You're not. So what's the vision? What's the plan? The plan can't be we're going to sign Jameis Winston and Russell Wilson. That can't be the plan. So I'll tell you right now, if I'm the owner, I'm not happy with this. I have a vision. You sold me on a vision. You sold me on a vision 3 years ago. And if the owner just needs as many wins as possible, then shame on the owner. Because it shouldn't be about the instant glorification of this season. Yeah, you want a season. You want to have wins and meaningful games in December. And you don't want the fan base flying planes over the stadium. Fine, I get it. But you also need a vision for the future of this team. What's the vision right now with the quarterback situation? Oh, what if he drafts a quarterback and you have to fire him? I need a future. Why keep these guys why keep them and then have it in the back of my head? Well, I can't let them do what they want because what if I fire them? Then just fire them. Like, none of it makes sense if I were the owner. If I were the owner, I would either fire them or I would let them do what they want. Half-assing it makes no freaking sense.